from WCVB Channel 5 podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We have a big Take 5 podcast on hand for you today. Not one guest, but two. Pete Blackburn of CBS Sports and Mike Reese of ESPN. And Ellen, I have to say, it's pretty tough right now to be a 40-plus sports star in Boston. They're becoming an endangered species. First, Tom Brady's out of town, and now Zdeno Chara.
I hear after 40, everything goes downhill, and I didn't know if you could confirm that or...
Why are you directing that towards me? Well, there's nobody on this podcast who's over the age of 40, at least that the audience knows.
That the audience knows, but I'm pretty sure they could probably just Google that real quick and find that one out.
Yeah, they probably could. But it's not how old you are. It's how young you sound. And recently, a viewer said I sounded like a 13-year-old girl. So I think I'm in good shape.
Did they really say that?
They really said that. It was an email I actually got. Speaking of being in good shape, is one Pete Blackburn in good shape now that Zdeno Chara is no longer captain of the Bruins and is gone after 14 years?
No, I have an inside scoop that says he was extraordinarily upset.
Speaking of behaving like a 13-year-old girl.
He said something along the lines of, I hate when things happen and when I care so much about them.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was upsetting to see him so upset, but, you know, this happens.
Well, you know, I think it caught a lot of people by surprise, even hockey insiders like Pete Blackburn, the fact that the Bruins sort of cut ties with Chara and he went to the Washington Capitals. So that was some offseason intrigue. Speaking of offseason intrigue, really fascinating offseason for the Patriots. Nobody better to break it down with than Mike Reese, Ellen. And Mike has an idea that somebody who is a part of the Patriots past could be coming back to be a part of their future at quarterback, one Jimmy Garoppolo. How would you feel about that?
Jimmy had his time here.
Okay.
I think the majority of people would be happy with him back. Allegedly, he's very attractive.
Okay.
It's what the people are saying.
Yeah, I think that's a widely held opinion.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just with our quarterbacks, it would fall in place to bring him on.
Yeah, you go from Brady to Cam, who's like swag is on 1,000, to,
right.
You know, Jimmy G, who is, I mean, the guy's nickname is Jimmy GQ. So, you know, that
exactly.
He's an attractive human being. So, yeah, to be the quarterback of the Patriots, you have to be attractive and have some swag. Jimmy would fit that. And I'll tell you what, there's no one who would like him back more than Bill Belichick. For Bill Belichick, Jimmy G is the one that got away. And he always sort of wonders, what would my life be like if I were married in a quarterback coach standpoint to Jimmy Garoppolo?
And does he deserve that second chance? Does he deserve to know that feeling?
I think he does. I think we all deserve to see a little upgraded quarterback play. And then Mike Reese, speaking of quarterback play, look, you have to have someone to throw to. Mike has a really interesting trade idea that I like a lot that would help the Patriots regardless of who the quarterback is. So all that and more coming up next on the Take 5 podcast. We kick it off with Pete Blackburn.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
Now, as promised, we're joined by Pete Blackburn of CBS Sports. Pete, what's going on?
Not too much. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Thanks for joining us here. Wanted to ask you, obviously, about the big news in Boston hockey, and that's Zdeno Chara's career being over with the Bruins and ending sort of unceremoniously. He ends up signing a one-year $795,000 deal with the Washington Capitals. I think it was pretty clear, Pete, from his Instagram message that he felt like the Bruins phased him out. So what happened here? Why couldn't you just come back to Boston for that contract?
Yeah, I think that's a big question that everybody's kind of wondering at this point. And, it's like a situation that I sort of liken to what happened with Tom Brady, where it seems like at least one side wanted to move on and the other side kind of figured it out where they were like, okay, we're moving on here. But with the Bruins, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me because the messaging of the team seems to suggest that they still think that they can contend and they're trying to contend, but they think that their roster is too good for Zdeno Chara. And to that point, I would say, well, since when? What have you done this offseason that would make your roster too good for Zdeno Chara, especially at minimum money? They have a lot of question marks on their left side of the defense that you know, seemingly Zdeno Chara, who is not, by the way, he's not the player that he once was. We all know that. He has looked old in recent years, but on a minimum deal, you're not going to find a better value than Zdeno Chara, both on and off the ice. But the Bruins seem to want to get younger on defense. And so I think that that's why they phased him out. But, you know, considering what he's done over the last decade and a half, you know, for me at least, warrant giving him one more year on a team that is trying to capitalize on their current window.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I think that's a great point. And that's the way I feel about it, Pete, that here's a team that has a core that's aging. You know, Patrice Bergeron is not getting any younger. He'll be 35. Tuukka Rask in the last year of his deal. David Krejci in the last year of his deal. If you want to take advantage of this core that you have that's gone to three Stanley Cup finals and won one Stanley Cup, just bring Zdeno Chara back. And then if during the year you find out you have better options or he has somehow declined more than you anticipated, as you mentioned, Zdeno has been good on and off the ice. I think he would be able to handle that and handle it like a pro.
They have some guys that could be really good. And, you know, at the end of the day, maybe this is the move that pushes them forward and helps transition them into a, you know, a new direction. And, you know, at the very least, you can gauge what you do have with Zdeno Chara out of the picture. But he's not a guy that I would push out, especially as you're trying to win right now. And, you know, the language that they keep using is that, you know, they wanted to move him into a reduced role. You know, my response to that is, well, fine. Like, Zdeno Chara should be in a reduced role. He had the second most ice time on the Bruins last year on the Bruins defense. The guy's going to be 43, 44. He shouldn't be your second most ice defenseman. So you can still find out some of these younger guys like Juho Vaakanainen, like Jacob Zboril, even Jeremy Lauzon, who we saw last year. And I thought he was a little bit shaky, but you know, you have to give those guys an opportunity to prove themselves. You know, you can do that with Zdeno Chara in the lineup. You know, I just don't think that they have the depth and the surefire prospects that Don Sweeney seems to think that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you on that. And to a point I think you brought up earlier, if they had brought in, say, a Noah Hanifin, if they had brought in, you know, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, then I could kind of see this move and you're sort of transitioning, and I get it. But those deals didn't happen. So after losing Krug, I just feel like when you look at your team and where you're at, and what the strength of your team is in a lot of ways, which is, you know, how well you play defense and your goaltender. What's the harm in bringing Chara back? And like I said, it's kind of like a win-win. Like, if one of these young kids like pushes him and outplays him, great. That's great. That means you have something. But to just sort of hand them ice time, I don't really understand that. And at the expense of a guy who was your captain for 14 years.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people have complained. A lot of Bruins fans have complained, and I think rightly so, that they haven't been tough enough to play against over the past few years. And, you know, that ends up coming up in the playoffs more so in the regular season. And, you know, if you want to argue that a 43, 44-year-old Zdeno Chara isn't going to really help the, you know, how tough you are to play against, fine, by all means. But, like, he's the biggest guy in the history of the NHL. So having a guy like out there, probably is at least going to intimidate some of the guys on the other end.
He's an automatic deterrent.
Right. So I don't think that this season I don't think they've gotten better. And number two, I don't think that they've gotten tougher to play against. And both of those things were or should have been on the docket for Don Sweeney. Those should have been the two biggest priorities for this team in the offseason. I don't think they did either of them.
So the Bruins officially open, you know, training camp on Monday. Where do you see them slotting at this point? Do you feel like they're basically the same team they were last year? And I know it's sort of hard to gauge with the bubble. Are they a team that you look at and say, okay, this is a legitimate cup contender, Pete? Or are they a team you look at and say, this is a team that's probably out in the second round again?
This is a team that won the President's Trophy last year as the best team in the regular season.
Great point.
And they went to game 7 of the Stanley Cup final the year before that. So like there's clearly something here. But I do think that they're trending in the wrong direction, number one. Number two, they play with the new alignment of the NHL for this temporary season or temporary alignment of this season. They play in the toughest division. So this is going to be a dogfight in that Eastern division. And, you know, I honestly think that they could be in the middle. Obviously, there are a lot of question marks on defense and in the depth and how this lineup is actually going to look. But when I look at the state of this team, and you know, based on what we saw last year, yeah, they were a pretty good team during the regular season. They were the quote unquote best team during the regular season. They won the President's Trophy. But I very much think that it was a team that was shielded by a couple of things. They had one of the best lines in hockey, and that did most of the scoring for that team. And you know, we saw in the playoffs, when you meet a team that is able to neutralize that first line, the secondary scoring and the depth is not there. And they went up against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who had the deepest team. And you can say, well, we lost the eventual Stanley Cup champions. I don't think that the Bruins would have matched up well depth wise against a lot of the teams that were still left in the playoffs if they could have neutralized the top line. And number two, that team was absolutely shielded by some of the best goaltending in the league last year. And, you know, we saw that once Tuukka Rask dipped out of the bubble, that's a huge luxury that you lose. And there's no guarantee that you're goaltending is so fickle and so unpredictable.
And you bring up an interesting point too with that division for this year, the Washington Capitals in that division with the Bruins. So they're going to see a lot of Zdeno Chara, and I think he'll probably be highly motivated. Pete, we'll get you out on this one as you drop some hockey knowledge here on the Take 5 podcast. You and I are fans of the same show, which was on FX, A Teacher. I'm just curious. I want your thoughts here. More disappointing ending, Zdeno Chara's career or A Teacher with the 10 years in the future reunion?
Oh, man. I'm going to say A Teacher because we never got to see Matt's band play. my big thing about The Teacher, we wanted to see Matt's band play. We never got to see him play any Wilco. So that was the most disappointing ending of the year.
I would agree with you on that, not for the same reasons. I just thought, you know, the whole trying to go 10 years in the future thing with the same cast, it didn't really... Kate Mara just didn't look like she aged a day.
Longer hair?
Yeah, like they basically just gave the protagonist kid basically sideburns and longer hair and said, okay, it's been 10 years. I think we're in agreement. Two disappointing endings that we all experience here at the end of 2020. The show A Teacher and Zdeno Chara no longer being a Boston Bruin. Pete, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. That's Pete Blackburn, CBS Sports. You can also catch him on The Brunch Podcast with our friend DJ Bean. Really appreciate you coming on here. I know you were probably strong-armed into it by our producer extraordinaire, Ellen Fleming.
Absolutely not. Thank you for having me. Very, very much appreciated.
Now, as promised, we're joined by the Dean of Patriots Reporters, Mike Reese of ESPN. Mike, how are you today?
Doing well, Chris. Great to be with you.
It's great to be with you. I learned a lot from Mike. We worked together back at the Boston Globe on the beat, and he's a big reason why I am where I am in my career today, and nobody knows the Patriots better than Mike. So, Mike, obviously an interesting season for the Patriots. They missed the playoffs for the first time since 2008, have a losing record for the first time since 2000, but they do end it on a high note, beating the New York Jets on Sunday. Put your Bill Belichick cap on. What is the most important thing you have to do this offseason to get this team back in playoff contention?
Can I switch it from a hat to a hoodie?
Yes, you can. Yes.
Okay, perfect. Because I'll just feel more the part if I do that, Chris, you know? So yes, let me go with the hoodie. Putting on the hoodie, I think I look at the skill positions, Chris. I think wide receiver and tight end are the two where I would actually start, almost over quarterback, because I would make the point that no matter who you bring in at quarterback, if you bring back the same level of personnel that you have at those two spots, I think we're going to be having the same conversation next year.
So that being said, you're upgrading those two spots. I know the team is in pretty good position in terms of cap space. How would you go about that? Would you dip into free agency? I mean, I think we all know that when it comes to wide receiver, traditionally, they haven't paid a lot of money. I still think the high watermark is Randy Moss's $9 million per year. So would you go into free agency and throw a lot of money at a Kenny Golladay or Juju Smith-Schuster? Or do you try once again in the draft to upgrade those two skill positions and hope that you have guys that not only can produce at an NFL level, but do it quickly?
I would hit it from all angles, and I wouldn't pick one, Chris. I would do it both. I'd do trades. You know, I actually like the idea, especially at receiver. And you and me, we've talked about this going back to the early days of Deion Branch in 2002 when they drafted him, like how it's easier for them to evaluate receivers once they're in the league versus coming from college. So my thought is get one that's already in the league, whether that's a free agent or a trade, and then draft another one, you know, and you almost hedge your bets a little bit. You know, you give yourself more odds of success. And I like to say, not just like talking theory, like I'm going to give you a specific example.
Okay.
Like I'm looking at this and I'm saying, N'Keal Harry is a player where you now have 2 years of information on him. What are you going to do with him? I mean, do you still think he's part of your future at receiver? Do you want to entertain the conversation of trying him as an H-back tight end type, which I think is fascinating to consider? Or do you want to try to sell the asset? Well, it might still be high because you've gathered enough information to say, you know what, this probably isn't going to go in the direction we want. And if you do that, look at a guy like that you might have drafted 3 years ago, Christian Kirk of the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm just going to throw the name out because I want to get specific with you.
Okay. Like, I like that player.
They liked him, Chris. They liked him coming out of the draft. He was a pre-draft visitor. So they've got all that intel. They've got 3 years of pro film on him. And I think he would fit well in this offense. And you almost just sort of redistribute your assets. So that's part of the direction I would look.
That's interesting. Now, do you have any sense of whether the Cardinals, who narrowly missed the playoffs this year, obviously they have DeAndre Hopkins. We'll see what Larry Fitzgerald does. Do you have any sense of them wanting to move on from a Christian Kirk?
Full disclosure, before presenting that hypothetical, I reached out to two reporters who cover the team. So they're not necessarily in the front office. Yeah. So they're one layer removed. But they said there's some questions, you know, with Christian Kirk out there entering the last year of his contract. So I think that would be a plus for Arizona if you were to say Arizona loved N'Keal Harry coming out of Arizona State, home, you know, hometown kid.
Yes.
And there was some talk that they were going to draft him, Chris, if the Patriots didn't take him at 32, that they were going to grab him at 33 with the first pick of the second round. Now, they might tell you differently. They ended up drafting a corner, Byron Murphy, who they said they had as a, like a top five guy. But you
they always say that. Yeah. Everybody always got the guy, the exact guy they wanted once they drafted him. Right.
So there's some variables in play, but some Christian Kirk, they were hoping for more, flashed early this season, tailed off a little bit, and he's had some injury questions similar to N'Keal's.
That's fascinating. I like the specific example. I will agree with you on this. I'll say this. I think regardless of who the quarterback was this year, it was going to be a really heavy lift given what was around them or what wasn't around them. I thought Damir Bird had a strong season. I actually thought he was an upgrade over Philip Dorsett, but Julian Edelman obviously was not able to finish the season. We don't know where he's at with that knee. You know, relying on N'Keal Harry at this point in his career is tough. I was very much heartened by what I saw from Devin Asiasi on Sunday in the finale. I thought it was great not only for him to record his first career catch, but his first career touchdown. But I've mentioned this before, Mike, Patriots had the lowest percentage of targets to tight ends in the NFL this year, entering that final game at just 7%. So I do agree with you. It was going to be a heavy lift for anyone. That being said, I think job one is upgrading the quarterback role. I don't think that Cam Newton is the right fit for them moving forward. I thought the rushing touchdowns, obviously they're outstanding, but they sort of run a precision passing game. And Bill Belichick always says the two most important things in a quarterback, accuracy and decision making. I thought that Cam was inconsistent in both of those areas. Do you foresee Cam coming back as the starter, or is it time to move on to somebody else who maybe is a better fit for this offense?
And I wouldn't disagree with anything you said. When you're talking about accuracy, decision-making, I'm thinking about our old beat writer's notebook at the Globe. And I'm like, these are things we heard
yes.
back in 2004, 5, 6, right?
Yes.
So like, it's so different what we saw this year because we didn't see the accuracy in decision-making. So to answer your question directly, Chris, I would say I wouldn't close the door until I know what my other options are, right? Because
yes.
there's a possibility that plan D, E, F, G could be Cam Newton, because
yes.
I don't think it's the best option going forward, but it might be one of the best based on things that you might hope would happen. Jimmy Garoppolo in San Francisco as an example.
Yeah.
What's the likelihood, Chris, of that? You know, and if that's not there, where else are you going to turn?
It's a good question. So let me ask you about that, because here's my feeling, Mike, and we'll get back to Cam in a second here. I would love to see Jimmy Garoppolo come back. I think he can be managed. I think he can be protected. And I think he's talented enough. He's proven this in San Francisco. He's talented enough to win you a lot of games if he can stay on the field. That would be my number one option. And I feel so strongly about the importance of the quarterback position that if the Patriots, say, had to give up the 46th pick in this draft, the number two pick they have in terms of the second round to try and get Jimmy back, I would do it. I just feel like that position is so important, and you know already that he fits in your system.
I'm on board, Chris. I would do it, and you know, you might not even have to give up that much.
Really?
Because, well, here's the thing is if he's available, there's a reason why. Like the 49ers are talking about the combination of his salary,
yeah,
or the cap charge, which is around $25 million, to the combination of his injury history. Like they might be looking to upgrade there. And if they are, who else is going to be in the market for Jimmy? You know, there's only so many seats at the table. I think he uniquely fits the Patriots based on him starting his career here. So if that's what the price is, like, honestly, Chris, sign me up.
I get the sense. I mean, this is just my sense. It's not based on information. But the sense that I get, you know, you mentioned you talk to beat writers of other teams. The sense you get when you talk to people is that Kyle Shanahan likes Jimmy Garoppolo. He acknowledges Jimmy Garoppolo is good, but he's kind of looking for a better option. I'm not sure that he's 100% sold on him. And I feel like Belichick was really sold on Jimmy. And if you believe that strongly in somebody and in a quarterback, I just think the right move is to bring that guy back.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And I would also make the point on Jimmy that the injury history, Chris, like, that's the risk you're taking.
Good point.
If you go there. Yeah. And you have to be confident.
It's a good
point. And that's the question that I have with Jimmy. And I think that's why he might be available to you. And I'm willing to roll the dice.
Me too.
I'm like, I'll give up the two for him.
I agree. And I think you're buying you know, low on an asset. Producer Ellen Fleming, you have a thought on this?
I do have a thought, because I think too much of the pressure has been put on Cam throughout this entire season. And to paraphrase Gisele Bündchen, he can't throw and catch the ball at the same time.
This is true.
And it's unfortunate that he's become this scapegoat. Yes, he hasn't been that great, but he's definitely extraordinarily competitive.
Yep.
He cares a lot. The team likes him. He's a leader. I mean, what was he supposed to do?
Yeah, the interesting thing to me, I would say, Ellen and Mike, is that obviously the NFL is a results-oriented business. It's a bottom-line production business. I think Cam Newton did everything he was asked to do, and I really appreciated the way he handled himself this year. But at the end of the day, it's a results-based business, and the results weren't there, and I wouldn't feel good about the Patriots bringing him back as the certified starter, which leads me to my next question. You know, can you bring him back and say, you're going to be a backup or you're going to compete for the job? Because in his interview with WEI, I believe the words he used were, hell no, he doesn't consider himself a backup.
I think it's a great point, Ellen and Chris. And I could see a scenario where they do bring him back. So I'm not closing the door here, right? And in the Jimmy discussion, part of the reason I like Jimmy, Chris, is you get more of the natural passing game.
Yes.
Right? Like that, which we saw how limited they were in that area. And I think even if they still brought better weapons around Cam, like, there's no guarantee that that passing game is going to look considerably better than we saw, because there's still going to be some questions on the accuracy and the decision making
yes.
that we talked about.
Yes.
But if he's not all on board, or if he really thinks he should be the guy, and he's a captain, how do you make your captain like a gadget guy or a backup quarterback?
Yeah.
So it complicates the conversation, doesn't it?
It really does. And I just think you look at it, you know, the Patriots tied for 31st in touchdown passes this year with 12. And, you know, Cam threw 8 of them. You know, 2 of them came from Jared Stidham and 2 of them came from Jacoby Myers. And I think that when your quarterback in some ways is more effective catching touchdown passes or running them in than he is throwing them in today's NFL. I mean, this season, the league set records for points, for touchdowns, for completion percentage. It's never been easier to throw the football and score that way. And I don't want to say never, but I would say never in the Bill Belichick era did it look harder for the Patriots to do it. And I just think you can't ignore that fact, which leads me to this, because obviously this is a disappointing season for the Patriots, Mike. But look, it was an amazing 2-decade run. But the only thing in my mind worse than finishing 7-9 was that I don't really feel like they made any concrete progress towards finding a long-term successor for Tom Brady. And along those lines, I was just surprised that Jared Stidham didn't get a start.
I think there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of layers to look at. You know, the first thing I look at is just the bottom line facts. He was the number two quarterback last year behind Tom Brady, one snap away from taking over the team. Chris, bottom line facts. This year, he opens the season, he's the number three behind Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer, a player he beat out the year before. And I get it. People are going to say, oh, they might have cut Brian Hoyer to bring him back. Well, when you cut a player, there's no guarantees coming back, as we saw. So you have to be comfortable with the trickle-down effect of that decision. Something happened, Chris. That's the only thing I can deduce from the way they viewed him from his rookie year to the way they viewed him at the start of this season. Like he, whether it was that he simply didn't take the bull by the horns, for lack of a better term, and seize the job, show confidence, whatever it was, there was some type of regression. And I just sort of, I'll leave it there because I think, I don't know what it was or how it happened, but it's hard to ignore the bottom line facts there.
What's interesting to me is obviously they felt okay putting him in games because we saw him play games this year. So he got into games, but it was always sort of cleaning up a Cam Newton mess. And I just feel like that's not really fair in terms of evaluating a player. I know Bill intimated on WEEI that you can learn or that they've learned what they need to know about Stidham in practice. But then leading up to the Jets game, in some of those press conferences, he was talking about, well, it's always good to see guys in game situations. So why is Stidham different from the other guys in other positions?
Well, this is why you're great, because you dig it out, Chris. I mean, it reminds me of Matt Cassel back in 2008, yeah, right? Like they felt like he was a backup that was worthy of that number two spot behind Tom Brady. But if we go back to Bill's news conferences in 2008, I think if I can almost hear it in my head, he said, look, we had a good feeling about Matt, but we didn't really know until he was going to be put in that situation.
Yes.
So the only thing I would add, maybe just to another layer of context on what Bill is saying, is maybe it's not that they already know everything they need to know about Jarrett. It's just that in that situation, like a season finale against the Jets with nothing on the line, like, is that really going to move you further along than what you would give up, which is pulling the rug out from under Cam, who's been a great leader,
yeah,
done everything you've asked.
Bill always does what's in the best interest of the team, and there's micro and macro, right? So the micro, just focused on 2020, yes, Cam gives you the best chance to win. I've never disputed that. He did. I agreed with him. But the macro, the big picture of what the Patriots are about, making the playoffs, winning championships, you can't do any of that in 2020. And you need to sort of move forward and evaluate guys. And you saw the level of playing time that a Devin Asiasi got, that a Dalton Keene got. Chase Winovich, you know, a little different with the injuries, but he played great. There were a lot of younger players who got a lot of time in the season finale so that they could get more tape on them. And it just baffles me that Jared Stidham was not in that group.
All fair, Chris. And another, I'll just add another log on the discussion. What if it's of the mindset that Bill Belichick's of the mindset that maybe Cam's coming back?
That would be like, interesting.
You know, so like this whole context of the conversation we're having, like he might be having a totally different mindset.
Great
of,
point.
Why would I turn to Jared Stidham if I'm still thinking about Cam as a legitimate option going forward?
Let me ask you about, obviously, this is going to be a very important offseason for the Patriots, but I want to ask you about some potential changes in coaching staff and football operations. Nick Caserio, reports are that he's going to interview for the Carolina Panthers GM job, the Houston Texans job. Also, Josh McDaniels should be another hot head coaching candidate this offseason. Do you think both of those guys could be elsewhere next year? And does the performance of the team this year and some of the uncertainty moving forward make it easier for them to sort of leave the nest, quote unquote?
So I think on the first part, Chris, I'll start with Josh McDaniels. I mean, it looks to me like there'd be two options for him that would be enticing. Jacksonville, if they're even interested, and the Chargers, you know. And I think the common thread there is you got two young quarterbacks that are going to be fun to work with. because the options are limited, I think the odds are less likely that he goes, right? Because there's fewer options to consider. So I think the higher likelihood is he stays. Nick Caserio, I don't have as good of a feel for. Seems like there's been a lot more interest there in the last couple of years. And maybe it's been generated almost by himself, you know, that he's looking for maybe that next career challenge. And I'm speculating a little bit there. But the idea that the Texans are coming back a second time, like
a third time.
It just doesn't strike me as an accident, especially when considering he has the same agent, if I'm not mistaken, as Jack Easterby, the former Patriots, team chaplain and character coach. So to me, nothing would surprise me with Nick. I think the Patriots are, he would be tough to lose. I think they have some solid in-house candidates that could step up into that role. Dave Ziegler, their director of pro personnel, I think is a worthy, succession plan if that were to happen.
Do you have any sense of if Josh did take another job, you know, where would Bill go for a quarterback's coach potentially? I don't think he probably would not give the offensive coordinator title, but basically play caller, quarterback's coach.
At that level is tough. I mean, I don't know if tight ends coach Nick Caley would be ready for that. Yeah. My instinct is probably that's a big jump that you'd want to have him take two steps, to get to that point. I guess I would just go to the familiar names, Chris, and it strikes me a little bit as lazy on my part, but what's Bill O'Brien planning to do? You know, would you like to come back and do part two? Adam Gase, I know that has been hypothesized. Yeah. I think there is a lot of mutual respect there. Would you consider coming here? I know he's been rumored to possibly be in the Alabama mix, there. So those type of names would make sense to me. Coaches in the same system that Bill has some familiarity with.
As I mentioned, just an offseason of uncertainty for the Patriots, Mike. They have a ton of free agents here, some very important players, David Andrews, Joe Tooney, Lawrence Guy, Adam Butler, Dietrich Wise, Rex Burkhead, James White. I mean, it's really, they have a lot of salary cap space, which is good, but they have a lot of free agent guys. As I name all those names, is there one guy you feel particularly strongly about the team needing to bring back?
About an hour and a half ago, I listened to David Andrews on a video conference, Chris, and I heard him talking about how there weren't many teams in the NFL reaching out to him when he was coming out of Georgia. But one head coach came to work him out, and it was Bill Belichick. Yeah. His eyes started to water. His voice started to crack. He was talking about how he loves football and how it matters to him to be part of this organization. Like, I think to me, David has elevated into that Kevin Falk, Troy Brown area, that realm. Not there yet, but approaching it, where it means a lot for him to be here. And I think it would mean a lot for the team to keep him here. Culture, linchpin type of guy. So I'm going to start there, even though I don't think when it comes to talent, he might not be my most talented free agent, but I think he might be my most important team player to bring back.
It's a great point, setting the protections. And if you have a young quarterback potentially through the draft or even somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo, I think they would feel a degree of security with David Andrews in front of them. So I think that's a really good choice. For me, I think I'm going to go with Lawrence Guy, just given the way at times they struggled to stop the run this year. There were six times this year they allowed more than 5 yards per rush. And the interior of that defensive line, Lawrence Guy is so reliable. He plays through injuries. He's just such a great fit. I want to ask you about Stephon Gilmore here. Again, I mean, I feel like there's just so many. Can you remember, just as an aside, Mike, like the last offseason where there were this many questions about the Patriots, about the future of the team and who's going to be on the team?
Yeah, this is as many as I can remember, Chris.
Gilmore has the $7 million base salary next year. There were reports this year he wasn't thrilled with his salary. The Patriots restructured it. They gave him the advance. Unfortunately, he suffered the quad injury that ended his season. Do you think he'll be okay playing for the $7 million, or is this a guy the Patriots maybe can shop and maybe get a little draft capital back, and maybe he gets to go to another team that's willing to rework his deal? It's a win-win.
Yeah, I can't imagine Stephon would be back playing on that $7 million, Chris. Like, that would surprise me. I think there is a lot. There was smoke with that situation this year. You know, hard to know how much of it was based in reality, quite frankly. You know, I don't think all of it was contract based. I think he had some legitimate personal things he was working through. Remember in preseason and in training camp where he was away from the team for a few days there. So I don't think that was all contract related, but I do think the contract has come to a head. Something has to change. Ideally for the Patriots, I think it's keeping Stephon. Like I wouldn't be so fast to get rid of that asset. But I think it will come down to what's the right number, Chris. You know, like, do you need to be up in that 17 million year range, you know, per year range where the top corners are? I think that might be too rich.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, too. Bill has traditionally, he doesn't say this, but if you're analyzing him, it's better to get out of a player a year early than a year late. And that might be part of it with Gilmore, too. And obviously, J.C. Jackson, who is a restricted free agent, had a tremendous year this year, second in the league in interceptions, and he had 11 turnovers, the most of any player during the Bill Belichick era. So this might be a situation where they feel like they have the successor. We're winding down here. I want to ask you two more questions. One is, Patriots, we have the number 15 pick in the draft. They have the number 15 pick in the draft. You are Bill Belichick. Again, I'm asking you to put the hoodie back on. Put the hoodie back on, Mike. Put the hoodie on. I know it's tough. We're projecting out the season just ended, but you have that pick in the draft. Who would you take?
So I think I'm making a pact with myself, Chris, right now with you, and I'm not locking in on a position.
Okay.
Like I think we make that mistake a lot,
we do.
And they do too. You know, you can make a point like that where they lock in on certain positions and make a mistake, pass up a good player. Like, I think this is the fourth highest spot that they would ever be under Belichick.
Wow.
All right. 2001, Richard Seymour, number
Great
six
pick.
Overall.
Great pick.
All right. Great pick, right? Probably wasn't their biggest need at the time. Ty Warren, number 13 in 2003.
Another great pick.
Another great pick, right? But at the time, if you go back and look at the headlines, people weren't like wowed by this, big defensive tackle from Texas A&M.
Okay.
And 2008, trading back from 7 to 10, Gerard Mayo, linebacker, Tennessee. Bottom line is most teams have about 12 to 15 players with legitimate first round grades. In my opinion, where you don't want to be in the first round is like 23, 24, 25, where they usually are, because you're picking a player in the first round that isn't necessarily a blue chip guy. You got a chance to get a blue chipper. I don't care what position, Chris. Just get the blue chip and get it up on your board, because as you've mentioned, they have a lot of needs.
Hey, great point, though, that when they've been high, they've drafted well. If they pick an offensive player at 15, it will be the highest drafted offensive player of the Bill Belichick era. So I find that interesting. We'll get you out on this, Mike. Nobody works a locker room better than Mike Reese. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. I've had the privilege of working with you and also watching you work. And frankly, the horror, anxiety of trying to compete against you. What was, seriously, you're great at working a locker room, building relationships. You know, you come up to guys at their locker and you talk and you know about their families. Obviously, this was a different year for everyone. And that wasn't an option. What was this year like, and how did it change the way you did your job?
Well, I think you're overly kind. I appreciate the kind words, Chris. It just creates like another obstacle. It makes it less personal. It'd be great if we can get back in the locker room and just get back to personal face-to-face interactions.
I totally agree with you. And did you find it just a little tougher to get those great nuggets you get this year when you're on Zoom calls with basically everybody else?
Well, Chris, it was harder and then they're not even exclusive to you.
Oh, good point.
Anything you're getting on the Zooms, everyone has. So it's part of the fun, as you know, of going into a locker room and maybe pulling out something that's unique, interesting, that might connect a fan with a player. You know what I mean? Like, part of the fun of that is when it's yours. So you miss that.
I know. Well, Mike, thanks for the time. I could talk to you all day long. And amazingly, we made it through this podcast without mentioning the time I dragged you to Waffle House against your will. That we'll save that for another time.
Love it. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Ellen. This was great.
It was awesome.
Thank you,
that's Mike Reese of ESPN, as good a reporter as you'll find reporting on anything, anywhere in the world. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. As always, you can catch the Take 5 Podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, we want you to go on there, subscribe, rate. It helps other people find the podcast. We'll catch you next time.